two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome on in. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Thanks for being with us. Oh, my gosh, we have so many things to get through. So much that went on over the weekend, and, of course, the BYU Cougars cracking the coaches' poll top 10 is, of course, going to be on the docket. Scott Mitchell, my co-host every evening here on KSL's Unrivaled. Did you happen to watch any of that BYU football game on Saturday?
I did, yes. I didn't watch the whole thing from start to finish, but
it was late.
Well, I have a curfew too, and and things that I need beauty sleep.
There was definitely a moment where a lot of people started streaming out of the stadium, the 6,000 fans, and people started leaving early, and other people were going,
to the exits.
After all this, you left early from the game. Did you want to be that person that was leaving the game after you begged to be able to go to a BYU football game? But that's part of the deal. BYU winning by a lot. The walking out early is your team earning the honor of you saying, you know what, we have this thing taken care of and we're walking away from it. We're going to kick off the show talking about BYU right here. It's a 705 cut. Let's do it.
The cut at 705. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Joining us right now on KSL's Unrivaled, he is the host of Cougar Sports Saturday and our BYU insider for KSLSports.com, Mitch Harper. We sat next to each other up in the booth. It was fun to have the fans in the stands, and I thought they did a good job of actually making some noise in the stadium, Mitch.
They did. That one possession that Texas State took over in BYU territory off the Zach Wilson fumble, the crowd was loud. They made their presence felt. So I thought that was cool to see the fans there and for them to get that opportunity to be back in Lavelle Edwards Stadium. It was a great sight to see and hope that it can continue. And maybe we can get up to 24,000 fans maybe at Lavelle Edwards Stadium at some point this fall, but because it was great to see all those Cougar fans in attendance.
Did you get a sense that the players were – you know, I hate to say it, they've learned their lesson, and they seem to be focused, and that there was an energy, there was a sense of urgency. They were like, we're going to take care of business tonight.
Yeah, I think so. That UTSA game was a great lesson for this team because they couldn't take anyone lightly, and Texas State, as we were talking about last week going into it, I mean, they were just completely outmatched, a young, inexperienced team, and BYU dominated them, and that's the only thing that BYU can really control is winning ball games and then doing it with some style when you're going up against these teams that are far outmatched compared to BYU. So it was a great game, and BYU stayed healthy for the most part too. I know that, you know, Zach Wilson, he's been wearing that precautionary boot going in. Like he came off the bus into the stadium, he's wearing a boot, and then he leaves the stadium, he's wearing a boot, and in between, he's putting together performances that continue his climb in the Heisman rankings. But so it was just kind of a good night all around for BYU, and it's building momentum towards a potential huge game coming up in a few weeks.
He's wearing the boot. What is this, the Beehive boot?
Yeah, it is.
What boot is he wearing? The one with all the laces on it? Or the old leather boot? What boot
is it? Isn't there a toe injury or something like that? Is that what it is?
Yeah, he injured his ankle a little bit against Houston midway through, and Steve Pinkock, the trainer of BYU, kind of was examining it a little bit, and they changed out his cleats in the Houston game. So he played the rest of that Houston game without any issue, but what we've heard is that he's been wearing a boot as a precaution, just make sure there's no additional pain or anything like that to his ankle. But still, so he's putting together these great performances the past week and a half against Houston and Texas State on kind of, you know, not being at 100% health with that ankle. Again, what we've heard, it's all precautionary. And he's going to be okay, and it's not going to affect his availability.
How it is.
Well, I want to know something, Mitch, because this is a conversation that's actually – it's a nice one to have when you're a BYU fan, that I've heard some people in the office kind of having this discussion. I was just chatting with Kevin Eubank, who, of course, our chief meteorologist here at KSL Television, and he said, so why are they pulling Zach Wilson so early? Because that kind of that question came up after the game as well. We were kind of wondering when it would happen. And if he's wearing a boot in and out of the stadium, maybe it's, you know, that question answers itself. But there's the part two where you go, Zach Wilson this year has played 2.5 quarters, a couple of games, in a year that they're looking for this guy to boost his resume, boost BYU's resume by proxy with this guy. Why do they pull him out so early? Is it just because of the precautionary side of things, because they've been stung before by the injured quarterback, or is it, hey, we want to be respectful and not run this thing up too much?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think honestly, though, it was more a situation too where Texas State they knew that there was no chance that they were going to come back against BYU. I think this coaching staff knew that BYU was the far superior team, and that they were not at risk of letting Texas State mount a comeback against BYU, because the defense was playing great for BYU. They just all around, all three phases were dialed in once again. And I think you get a chance to give Baylor Romney some reps, some opportunity to get some film in. You take that opportunity because you know Zach Wilson's already established himself as one of the best quarterbacks in college football this year. You got to protect him at all costs. I mean, you got to go back to 2013, the last time BYU went wire to wire week one to the final game with the same starting quarterback each and every game. So you gotta protect him at all costs.
Scott, look, I was going to ask you that.
BYU has a good offensive line. Put the boot on Zach Wilson in the second half of the game.
That's what I'm saying.
Get him out there and keep him there as long as you possibly
can.
Scott,
he wants to stay there, doesn't
he?
He's
this guy. Oh, of course he does. Yeah, he doesn't want to come out of the game.
What's going on?
You never want to come out of the game.
I don't want to run it up too much, but at the same time, the guy had 4 touchdowns. He had 287 yards. He could have thrown for an – everybody, honestly, what were we saying up in the booth, Mitch? It was like, when do you take him out? This is at the beginning of the game, and it was
– after he's thrown for 500 yards. That's
we said, like, we said 350 would be nice, you know? But don't – I mean, the 2.5 quarters thing, if you want to dial points happen, you don't pull
Alabama.
Them early.
Think of Alabama, and they always play a team like this, and the score is 60-something to whatever. And so you can't take your guy out until you get to 60 points. I know I'm being kind of funny here, but I'm really not. I'm really not. And I'm trying not to be disrespectful. And my attitude it's not about a disrespect thing. It's about the perception that people are going to have from Zach Wilson on a national stage. They're not going to go, well, exactly what time did he come out of the game against Texas State? Because that's going to influence my pick. It's all about the numbers, and you've got to have the numbers, and your numbers have to be ridiculous. Okay, Andre Ware, when he won the Heisman Trophy, he was from Houston. They didn't even know Houston had a football team back when he played there. They were known for Phi Slamma Jamma, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon and all that stuff. And he had these ridiculous numbers, and they were beating people 63 to whatever. I mean, he created crazy numbers at the time. They're just normal numbers today, but at the time, and I'm just telling you, if BYU, if they're really serious about Zach Wilson and the Heisman Trophy, they have got to just unleash the hounds and be ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Well, I don't think they're honestly that too worked up about the Heisman. I mean, we haven't even seen a campaign for BYU yet. So I just think that, honestly, they know they just want to keep him healthy. And I think that's the least of their worries. I believe that. I just think that they're trying to have a perfect season and get to a New Year's Six bowl because that's within reach. And I think that this team has got the benefit of the doubt from the nation. Everyone says weak schedule, yes, but they had to piece together a schedule on the fly. And if you can navigate this and go undefeated, you're going to play in the biggest bowl game that BYU's played in nearly a quarter century. That, to me, is kind of like what they're trying to shoot for, and that's why you're seeing Zach Wilson get pulled when the game's and not in doubt.
All right, so this week BYU is, of course, taking on Western Kentucky, which is another directional school from a state you don't typically get a lot of respect in terms of, like, you know, what does this team do in terms of football? I think you hear more about Western Kentucky on the basketball front, but what does BYU have to do this week, and who is this team that they're facing with the Hilltoppers coming to Provo, and how do they prep for this and not look ahead to Boise State next week?
Well, the most notable thing, guys, might be the mascot of Western Kentucky. Cosmo versus Big Red might be the best matchup to watch. If hopefully we see Big Red coming up in Provo with Cosmo, that would be quite the matchup. But seriously, Western Kentucky last year, they were a really good football team. They were a 9-win team, one of the best teams in Conference USA. This year, they've taken a big step back. Todd Helton's the head coach. He's brother to Clay Helton, the USC head coach. So good family lines there. He's a good coach, but they've had a lot of injuries. And even at their quarterback spot, they had a graduate transfer from Maryland. They call him Piggy. He's been the quarterback, starting quarterback, but he's been banged up the past couple weeks. So they have their backup, who might be the starter this week coming up against BYU. He started in the last two games. So kind of some quarterback issues there. They just haven't had much success at all this season. They struggled last week against a team in Chattanooga who was begging folks on Twitter, hey, if you want to play us, we'll play the game. And Western Kentucky slid in their DMs, gave them $500,000, and barely beat them 13-10. So this Western Kentucky team is really bad. And I think what we saw this past weekend, we're going to see a lot more on Halloween night.
How can you be afraid of a Hilltop bird? Well, I mean, the mascot, I don't know.
It sounds like an ice cream, additive that you can get on there. All right, Mitch Harper, you'll hear him all week this week on Cougar Tracks, and of course, this weekend hosting Cougar Sports Saturday as well. Another late kickoff this weekend for your Halloween night. So we're going to take the break here. Mitch, thanks for hanging out with us, man. We appreciate it again on a Monday, and we'll come back. We got more to go. Tim Hughes is going to join us for the Silver and Black Attack coming up in a little while. Next, we're going to talk about the cancellation of some bowl games for the offseason. Could affect the way the Pac-12 looks at things in the offseason. Stay with us. More to go right here on KSL's Unrivaled KSL News Radio.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Keery. It is a Monday, and Monday is a fun day on our show, but it's all about sports. And, of course, I was watching before we came on the air tonight, Alex.
You got the Bears and Rams. You've been watching some
Monday. Oh, no, I haven't been watching that. I got kind of fascinated with the confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett as the newest member of the Supreme Court. And it was rather riveting to watch the dissenting votes. So all the Democrats, of course, they weren't happy about this. And as they voted, they walked out. And so they walked right up to the front of the where they counted. And a lot of them were rather demonstrative in their, it wasn't just yay or nay. It was like, this is a resounding no. And there were some, you know, a few swear words, and there were a lot of thumbs down.
This is like when you and I get in the same building at the same time, and we try to decide the things that are on the rundown. It happens very similarly.
Right. Yeah, of course.
Some person dissents and then walks out and cusses at the other person.
Yeah. Don't talk to me right now. I need some time to just cool off here. Anyways, it was riveting. It was fascinating to watch our government in action right there.
That's kind of fascinating. That's the part that...
It felt a little bit like a train wreck. I'm just going to say.
Yeah. That's why now that you mention it like that, I'm so excited that I've been watching this Monday Night Football game.
Yeah.
The Rams are leading the Chicago Bears 10-3. It's 5-1, the Bears, to the 4-2 LA Rams. Man, these are good teams that are playing. I like when we have good games on these Monday Night Football games.
There's a lot of good teams this year in the NFL.
I know, and there's some really bad ones. That's the thing that's really interesting, is just to see the haves and have-nots. That gap has gotten a lot wider. I want to bring the middle class back to the NFL, Scott, and that's why I want you to vote for me come this election season. As we get going here, I want to bring up something that happened. First of all, I want to start taking quotes and applying them to our own lives, Scott, to you and me, okay? I want us to find a way to take Kalani Sitake's quotes from the week and apply it to our show. So here's Kalani Sitake talking about the win over the win over Texas State on Saturday. But how can we apply this to our own personal show here, Scott?
Keep the theme of staying focused and trying to be as humble and as hungry as possible. Mm. It's a fine line, you know, but I really believe our guys have found the balance and are doing a really good job with it.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
Coach.
See, I think we're better if we're not focused. I think
I'm going to definitely do the hungry thing. I don't know about the humble, but I'm going to stay hungry all show long.
Yeah, we can stay hungry.
I just love the. I want to do that every week. Look, take whatever Kalani says. It's probably going to apply to making a better radio show.
Yeah.
And you know what? Frankly, if you're listening to the program, Kalani's quotes. Listen, here's another one for you. These are just gems. It's basically like sitting down and going to like a Stephen R. Covey, some sort of a get together, you know, to buy one of those planners and improve your life. Here's another one.
Seminar.
For you.
Talked about how our team has handled adversity really well and been able to bounce back. And I think in agreement with that, I think that our players have handled success really well too. So. The fact that they're staying humble and trying to be as hungry as possible, trying to get better, not settling on
that hungry, humble
thing they've done
again.
So far, just looking to get better. I think it's been a good mindset that our players have had.
Yeah, look, Coach, you don't have to tell me twice. I get it. I'll stay hungry. I'll stay hungry all show
long. Well, what's hard right now, Alex, is with the pandemic, some of your favorite places, you know,
your dining locales,
buffet places.
Yes.
It's hard to you can't go to those places anymore.
And that's the humbling part.
You can't
Scott.
Even get right. It's completely that.
Yeah.
Way.
So yeah. So
how are you going to maintain that figure? If you can't go to Chuck-a-Rama anymore. It's terrible.
We usually do bold and stupid as our theme. I'm going to go humble and hungry. That's going to be our theme the rest of this year.
A new theme.
I'm going to
turning a new leaf.
And we're going to eat.
We're
that
bouncing
leaf.
Back. He said bounce. I love that they bounced back.
Yeah. Oh.
It's like okay. Look, they're 6-0. What have they bounced back from?
Going to ask you that. What adversity have they actually seen? Maybe in the Houston game, you could say BYU's faced some adversity. But I guess, you know, there have been some injuries here and there, too. I mean, Matt Bushman being out for the year is that's a massive blow before the season starts, right? Where you go.
That was a tough one.
Shoot.
Just wanted to see how I'll bet he would have had a remarkable year.
I mean, think about it.
Phenomenal year.
Right now, Dax Milne, I mean, over this week, here's what I liked about this game. At the end of at half, there were 9 different receivers who had caught passes from Zach Wilson. Well, there were 8, and then he had also caught a pass, a double pass. So you had 9 guys with receptions in the game. And normally before that, it was the Dax Milne, Gunnar Romney, and throwing a tight end here and there type of a show because he had thrown for 1,300 yards, or I guess it was 1,500 yards, and 1,100 of those yards were to either Dax Milne or Gunnar Romney. But now he's just slinging it all over the field, which I like. But at the same time, I love seeing kind of some superstars emerge. Dax Milne is like already kind of this like half celebrity on the field that these guys have to try to cover. Now, this is a former walk-on, it's just amazing to see a guy go, I'm getting this attention, and I'm going to just eat it up.
But if you were a quarterback, if you were a team, if you were a coach, if you were an offense, if you could have your choice between, okay, I've got 2 or 3 superstars, or I've got 8 or 9 people that I can throw the ball to, and you have a lot of weapons, a lot of balance, you are gonna go. The percentage is way in your favor to have that balance on your team. You look at those 49er teams, the Steve Young, Joe Montana 49er teams, and they're really everyone was involved, and it's hard for a defense to key into things. Look at Tom Brady, what he's doing in the NFL right now. He's got a lot of guys involved, and it builds the confidence. It builds the energy on the offense. It's like everyone feels like they're a part of it. You know, everyone steps in the huddle going, you know what, this may be my turn on this play right here. I don't know. And it's a lot easier than some guys going, man, I'm never going to get the ball. You know, this guy over here gets it all the time, and he gets all the glory, and everyone talks about him. And I'm not chopped liver over here. But he's going to make a remarkable play in a game, and a lot of fans like that. They like the superstar type of mindset. But having that balance, man, that is a good thing to have as a football team.
When I looked up and I saw those numbers, and they were all there were a handful of guys with 3, 4, 5 catches, and you know, not like an 11 catch game for anybody, which they've kind of leaned on the first few weeks of the season. I think it's Zach Wilson also going, you know what, I'll take that third look, you know, I'll get through my progressions and I'll check it down, or maybe I'll go to that second look. He can see things very, very well. I mean, on that field, you can see how good his vision is when that ball gets released and you go, oh, he knows where that guy's going to be on this route before he even breaks. So it's really good to see that talent and that talent level. I want to bring something up to you, Scott. 4 bowl games have now been canceled, and 2 of those are going to impact the Pac-12, the Holiday Bowl and the Red Box Bowl have both been canceled. Those are bowls that
Pac-12,
yeah, affiliated bowls. And those are good bowls too. Those are ones that are
that you want to go to.
If Utah goes to the Holiday Bowl at the end of the year, that's a good season. I mean, you're talking about that's the second or third kind of bowl for the Pac-12. But those are 2 bowls that are not just the garbage throwaway bowls that we sometimes see that are thrown in there. What kind of an impact does that end up having? Because I'm imagining that these are not going to be the only bowls that we see go away for this year.
Yeah, I've wondered all season long, like, what's going to happen in the bowl situation. We haven't heard anything, you know, other than maybe the playoff situation. The thing that, as you were talking about this, it just jumped into my head. Utah will not even start playing for another 2 weeks, and they're already canceling bowl games. I mean, it's just kind of like, you know, by the time they got to the end of the season, maybe they're not going to be very many bowl games. And I wonder how all of this is going to happen with so many teams having to delay their season, and they get into mid-December, you know, even kind of the 19th of December with some of these schools. And so how are you going to fit all the bowl games in? I wonder about fans, because, you know, you want to go to a bowl game, and it's a part of a celebration of a season. But if they're not going to have fans there, how do these bowls, how do these local economies generate the kind of revenue they get from a lot of the fans coming into the bowl, and especially these bowls? I mean, people will show up for these bowl games. Went to the Holiday Bowl a couple of years ago, and it's a lot of fans in the stands. It's a fun place to go, San Diego, and just with the limited ability to do anything and probably very few people going to the game. I mean, I'm not sure the bowl games could even be profitable without the fans coming.
I wonder if there's going to be, I mean, those adjustments are going to be made for sure. But if that ends up affecting the way that, you know, I think it's going to benefit ultimately when you have fewer bowl games. That means you're going to have fewer teams that are 2-6 this year going to a bowl game, because they took that rule away for this season of you don't have to be 500 or above to go to a bowl game. You can have a really bad record, not just a losing record. You could potentially have a 1-7 team going to a bowl game. You'll have fewer of those moments when you have fewer of these bowls. They could definitely afford to have some of these bowls go away for this season. Cut the fat on these and figure out which ones are going to actually be beneficial, and those are the ones we want to see. When we come back, it's the Silver and Black Attack, of course, the PA announcer for the Raiders, our Tim Hughes, host of Utah's Morning News, also going to join us coming up next. Talk about that Raiders loss over the weekend to Tampa Bay. Stick around. More to go right here in KSL's Unrivaled.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Carey on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Carey, Scott Mitchell. Thanks for being with us. After the weekend, of course, we digest all the things that happened over the weekend in the NFL, in college football, in all of the things that go on. And, of course, we have some special, unique insights now into the world of the Las Vegas Raiders, our NFL team in the now basically in our backyard. You have now become, whether you like it or not, your Raider overlords have taken over, and we shall be Raider fans going forward. Unless you're not, of course. But Tim Hughes joins us, of course, as he does every Monday for our Silver and Black Attack. Here we go.
Guys are really bad.
The Silver and Black Attack. Scott and Alex cover it all as the Raiders pillage and plunder their way through year number one in Las Vegas.
All right, Tim. Now that the novelty is worn off of you going to Allegiant Stadium, it must feel like it must be really awkward in the stadium that's already very quiet when the home team, after a bye week, loses to Tampa Bay 45-20, a really, really tough fourth quarter. But now the team falls to 3-3, and I think that we're kind of also realizing at the same time that Tampa Bay is really good right now and in a good spot. But what did we find out from the Raiders this week? I feel like there was so much distraction of the non-football type this past week with the COVID testing and things like that, and with guys being set out and then activated right before the game again. Where was the team after the loss?
After the loss, they were all really down. And, you know, it was interesting to listen to Gruden, both with his post-game comments, but again in his press conference today, where he's trying to, you know, find some bright spots in all of this and hopes that this will actually be a motivator. You talk about this Tampa Bay team, they lead the league defensively, you know, and they're the toughest defense statistically against the rush. And the Raiders just had a hard time moving the ball on the ground. But it was a pleasure for me just to be there and watch an old Wiley veteran like Tom Brady operate. And when you give him that much time in the pocket, he is going to find somebody.
Yeah, when you're a Raiders fan or a player, Tom Brady has kind of been that, a thorn in your side, I guess, for his whole career, going back to the Tuck rule a long time ago when, clearly it looked like the Raiders, that was a fumble if you ask any Raiders fan. Having those linemen out and having a lack of practice time, It clearly impacts the running game, and for the Raiders to be effective, they've got to be able to have some of that balance and take some of that pressure off of David Carr. But the Raiders were in this game. I mean, it wasn't like it looks unappealing or deceptive, I guess you should say, the final score. But this was a pretty close game, and I think that's a positive, I guess you could take out of it, that the Raiders played a really, really good football team close and had a shot to win it late.
Well, and that was the point that Gruden really wanted to emphasize. With 11 minutes left in this game, it's a four-point spread or a four-point game. It's 24-20, and the defense had held the Bucs to a 3rd-and-13. They go into a zone defense, and Brady, again, not getting much pressure on a checkdown, finds, I think it was Fournette, for a 15-yard gain. That play and then the tip pass that ended up being an interception were the two plays that really turned that game in the fourth quarter. But everybody felt like the Raiders were in it with 11 minutes left for sure.
Tim Hughes, of course, joins us for our Silver and Black Attack every Monday, breaking down those home games, especially with the Raiders. And it doesn't get any better this week. I mean, they've got to go to Cleveland, a team that is pretty hot right now. Baker Mayfield's healthy again, and they just, he threw for a ton of yards over the weekend, investing Joe Burrow in the Cincinnati Bengals. So now you go on the road to a place that you hate to travel to play anyway, on a team that usually you could go, oh yeah, we got these guys, but now the Browns have gotten so much better. This is no rest for the wicked.
No, but you know what's interesting with this team, and yeah, I don't know what the reason would be, but they do seem, speaking of the Raiders, they do seem to play better on the road than they have at home. They had the big win against Drew Brees, obviously, but whether it's young guys that are more focused when they're on the road and in the hotel instead of being around Las Vegas, I don't know. But you would hope also, and Scott touched on this, that this COVID thing this past week really just disrupted everything. The rhythm of the practices, guys couldn't practice all week. And then they find out at the last minute that they can by getting a negative test. And, you know, not having Abrams back there, Arnett was out on the injured list. Those two guys at corner and safety just made a huge difference. But I think they're still going to be confident going to Cleveland. And I know that the big focus this week is going to be on the defensive side of the ball. There's a lot of talk about maybe moving personnel around a little bit, maybe changing up some schemes. But Gruden knows that something really needs to change there. And if they don't start getting pressure on quarterbacks, that was the one thing they had in Kansas City. They had a couple of sacks. They had none. I think they may have touched Brady once in that entire game yesterday and no sacks, while Carr went down three times.
Well, Khalil Mack was a pretty good person who could get to the quarterback.
Oh, Scott always has to bring that kind of stuff up. How dare you?
Of course, they let him go a few years ago. I'm sure Gruden wants to hear that name again.
It's like bringing up Antonio Brown at this point. Yeah.
It feels like to me, Tim, that the Raiders are one of those teams where they're on the verge of going like to the next level, or it's like the road is kind of – they're at that fork in the road, I guess. And I remember talking one time to Ronnie Lott, and he talked about Hacksaw Reynolds coming to the San Francisco 49ers, and he was the guy that changed the whole culture. And he would he said, and he did it with 14 sharpened pencils. And he said this guy showed up with 14 pencils to every meeting to make sure that he always had something to write and take notes. And he was a voracious note taker, but the point was, is there's this level of like fine detail and this commitment to those little tiny things. Because I'm telling you, I can show you in this game. You know, you were mentioning earlier these little points. You know, tip pass here. You know, they're in this game until the very end. But there's some little moment that kind of sways it one way or another. And I really believe it's that attention to those little details, because a lot of this issue with guys being out on the offensive line possibly could have been changed had the offensive lineman been wearing his tracing device so they could know where people were and who he really was in contact with. And if you're really committed to that excellence, as they say with the Raiders, it's those little details. And it just feels to me like this Raiders team maybe doesn't quite get that or have that right now.
Well, and again, I go back to the fact that they're so young. But boy, I'll tell you, questions, two or three of them in the press conference today with Gruden, and he was not happy
right, to
have to keep talking about COVID. He was upset that everybody wants to keep talking about the Raiders not doing a good job on the COVID thing. And he says, if you check across the league, Raiders have actually been doing a pretty good job. And he talked more about defeating the virus than he did about defeating the Cleveland Browns, which was kind of interesting today. But it is the little things. And, you know, there's a couple of positives. You look at this Nelson Aguilar and what he's done. He had five catches yesterday, and I think going into the game, he had caught 10 of 11 targeted passes to him. He had 107 yards yesterday. And they're trying to find ways to get Ruggs more involved. You saw him try a little end run where they'll, you know, flip him the ball in the backfield and just getting some open territory to run. He's so fast. There are some positives that are going to happen with this team. It's going to take time. And in the meantime, Raider fans need to just chill. You don't need to get rid of a defensive coordinator. You don't need somebody besides Derek Carr back there at quarterback. They're coming along.
And then the off-season stuff happens too. We're not even to the halfway point of the season, and we're already everyone's solving problems by firing guys and cutting guys. All right, Tim Hughes, all season long, of course, he'll be joining us on the Silver and Black Attack, and we love that Tim can join us. And hey, get some sleep tonight, and we'll listen for you tomorrow on Utah's Morning News. Tim, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again. In the meantime, we've got more to go. Our MVPs are up around the corner. I've got a lot of things to ask Scott coming up as well. An Ask Scott Anything segment will be coming up around the corner as well. Stay with us right here on KSL's Unrivaled.
Okay, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Curie. It's a lovely Monday night, as I mentioned earlier, but it's also Monday Night Football, and the score is 10-3 for the Los Angeles Rams over the Chicago Bears. You know, I watched Nick Foles, start of the third quarter, by the way. I watched Nick Foles, and he just seems to be a guy, I don't know how comfortable he is being an everyday starter in the NFL. He's like I don't want to say a middle reliever in baseball. He's not really a closer. You know, he's just a guy that can kind of come in. I would call him a middle reliever. I just don't get a sense that he's just this everyday, like an Aaron Rodgers, a Drew Brees, a Tom Brady, a Ben Roethlisberger, a Russell Wilson. He just doesn't seem to be that guy. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy.
Well, yeah, I mean.
But he won a Super Bowl. I mean,
know. And you know what? You actually, there's a funny thing about some of these guys who've been just like really good backups. They've never been the greatest starters. But there are also these guys who will come in and go, you need, it's like I specialize in fixing things, you know, like I show up,
right.
They call me, you know, only one person has my number. It doesn't have my name on it at all, but they call this number and you get a Nick Foles and you get, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick's been this guy too, right? Where you like, you don't want him as your number one quarterback necessarily to start the season. But if he comes in or if he's with you for 1 year and you
he's
go, I like Fitzmagic, man. I mean,
right.
he's hot and cold, but you get a lot of hot from the guy too. I mean, like
he's like 4 to 6 weeks of good,
yeah.
And that's about maybe 6 weeks maybe.
And as a backup, maybe that's all you need from the guy, right?
Right?
I mean,
yeah.
It's speaking of guys with Utah ties, Jalen Johnson's had a really good rookie season for the Bears, and he's just kind of fit into this really, really good defense. He just had a pass interference call on him, but I was listening to the GameCast before the show. And they were just, you know, praising this guy up and down for being this awesome rookie out of, and just how much of a massive impact he's already had. I mean, we saw how good he was at the University of Utah and how churning out really good defensive backs over the past couple seasons has been, you know, kind of Utah's calling card and linebackers and defensive linemen for that matter. But I'm really glad when I see local guys who've been playing here, especially in the rookie seasons. And you see, too, like guys like Fred Warner or Daniel Sorensen with a pick six. I just love the local guys having impacts, you know, immediately on teams or continue to have success over there. And I love it. They go, yeah, it's his fourth year out of BYU. It's his rookie season out of Utah, and they love this guy, and he fits in with the team, and they feel like they got him for a steal, you know, in the second round. And so I love hearing that kind of stuff. So I wanted to pass.
Yeah,
that
Jalen
on to everybody.
Johnson's a great player. I mean, he's got a great career at Utah.
And he's already having
an awesome. He's a really good fit for,
awesome.
For where he is. It couldn't be.
Could
in
you
a
imagine
better,
being
a better
drafted
spot than where he is right now?
And could you imagine being drafted to the Chicago Bears and to start on that defense your first season, like right out of the gates? Like, I think of classic defenses across the league. You think of the Bears, you know. You think of the Buccaneers, even maybe. You think of, you know, these teams that have just like this thing where they are locked down defenses, and to be already making that impact is pretty cool. Let's start things off, though, as we're already praising people and we kind of have that attitude already. Might as well just jump in right here to the MVPs.
The unrivaled MVP. Scott and Alex crowned tonight's most valuable player.
According to Alex.
Uh-huh.
According to Scott. Most valuable player.
Fake awards for real people, and this is always fun, Scott, when people have been on the poo-poo list and then they make the MVP list. So
they graduate.
They do. And now, look, no, nothing. This is a living list, so they could go right back to the poo-poo
yeah.
list.
So
and this guy has
to behave, or you're going to go right back where you started from.
This guy has the tendency to kind of, you know, live on the edge in both directions, I guess, on this. And so Jalen Ramsey, who is by the way, we're watching him on TV, plays for the Rams. He's this lockdown defensive back for them, and he's kind of been – he's lived in some – he's been in some places where he hasn't gotten along with the coaches there or the general managers or the owners or whomever. Got into a fight a couple weeks ago. That's what put him on the poo-poo list, and he ended up getting fined and everything. But I wanted to bring this up because Jalen Ramsey donated $1 million – to a local school near where he grew up. And this is a really cool thing to be able to look at this. Makes a $1 million donation to a community school we grew up in the St. Louis area. $1 million is nothing to sneeze at. This isn't like a penance thing either, I don't think. I mean, he probably could do with some positive PR, but normally guys don't just give $1 million. He feels like this is the school that, one, he could help people get out of a bad situation, and he could help people get into a spot where they could actually make a difference in their community. And since he's been able to do that and says, I'm going to give back in this way. I love when guys don't just give money to their community. They participate. He participates in the offseason in a lot of programs for these things. And he started up trusts. He started up scholarships. And then he's now donated $1 million.
You know what $1 million is, though? I mean, if people – can I just put it in a little perspective?
Yeah,
for
sure.
$1 million is basically $2 million. It takes you you earn $2 million to get $1 million. So it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money to just say, here you go. And it's tremendously gracious, but it's not just some word of mouth or you give people a few bucks. $1 million is a big deal. It's a massive deal to be able to do that. And he recognized too that he was the beneficiary of stuff like this in his life, and it made a difference. And so that's kind of putting your money where your mouth is kind of thing. And a lot of people in this world today are so caught up in money and having money, and that's a very generous offering that shouldn't be taken lightly.
It's a pretty cool deal to the to the Purpose Preparatory Academy. So the kids who go there, they're kind of hand chosen. LeBron has an academy like this where it's like, hey, kids who are coming out of particularly tough situation, who could have a particularly bright future, who are given these opportunities. And what was really cool is he had a bunch of these kids who were sending him videos thanking him for all that he's donated and stuff. And he got to sit there in the call and listen to all these kids thank him, and he got emotional about it. It was pretty cool. So there you go. Jalen Ramsey, you're on the MVP list tonight. You better watch out. You could be right back on that.
So since the Rams and the Chicago Bears are playing each other, my MVP is actually a former Chicago Bear from the 85 championship team. And that's Coach Ron Rivera, who's the head coach of the Washington Redskins.
Oh, yeah.
And he got a massive win yesterday against the Cowboys. Quite frankly, a dominant win. And he's been going through chemotherapy treatments for cancer. And he just finished his last round of chemotherapy, and he was able to celebrate that and ring the bell that he had gone through his chemotherapy treatment. And so he's had a cancer that was detected early and actually gave him an opportunity.
A lot better chance, yeah.
Better chance. And so, of course, cancer, it kind of touches all of us, and it certainly has been something that's touched me in my life as well. And it's just a mean, vicious thing. And this October is a cancer awareness, breast cancer awareness month. And so
they have this Crucial Catch program with the NFL where they say, hey, just get checked, go and get screened. If you have if it runs in your family, whatever, go and get it done. And, all these NFL players are donating a lot of money, donating a lot of time, and to have a head coach on the Washington football team be kind of the front of that, where it's like, hey, I went early, got screened, and because it was so early in the process.
And even though he went early, he still had to go through it. And chemotherapy is no joke, and it's no fun. And
while he's coaching, too.
And it's a courageous thing. So good for him, and happy that he was able to recover from it.
They set up that coach's corner for him with all of his family and friends, their pictures in the stadium while they play there in Washington. It's been pretty cool to watch. All right, taking the break here. When we come back, Ask Scott Anything. It's all coming up around the corner after news, traffic, and weather. Stay with us.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Rams still leading the Bears 10-3. Starting things off here on your Monday Night Football for your week of football. We have so many things to discuss and to talk about. I won't try to bore Scott with my predictions on Dancing with the Stars. That'll come later on in the season, of course. But I wanted to jump into something here. It's a It's a special little thing that we do now with Scott because we get to have Scott as a resource, okay? This is a guy who played in the NFL for a dozen years, played at the quarterback position, which is one of the most scrutinized of all the positions in the NFL. And so we get to ask Scott anything. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to kick off the segment here. It's called Ask Scott Anything. Let's just jump in.
Hey, Ask Scott Anything. Insider questions, candid answers, nothing's off limits. Just don't make it awkward. It's Ask Scott Anything.
So let's start off with the poll questions that are up, Scott. I'm going to ask you the poll questions. This one about the should... So the idea of some of these bowls getting canceled has led to the discussion, as usual, of people wondering about the BYU and Utah series going forward, at least in the, you know, could there be a possibility of BYU and Utah ever playing this season? The answer is probably no, but with bowls getting canceled and some of those possibilities going away of a quote-unquote normal bowl season, if BYU had the chance to go to a bowl and play in the Idaho Potato Bowl against a MAC team or something like that, or be able to play a Utah team who might not be able to go to a bowl because one of the good ones is canceled or something like that, what could you do? So the question is, should BYU and Utah schedule a non-conference matchup instead of a bowl game? You have a yes, a no, and a yes if there is no possibility of a college football playoff in the New Year's Six invite.
I think it'd be awesome to do this if you could do it like maybe in a neutral location. Or a place where you could do it with a decent number of the fans.
Could you make it a bowl, like an unofficial bowl?
Imagine going to Las Vegas.
Be awesome.
You know, and I don't know if they'll relax the fan interaction for that, but that would be great. You know, because bowls are where you want to go and celebrate your season, and your fans get to go. And you know, Utah in December, I don't know, is the best place for maybe a team. I mean, sometimes it's mild here. You never know, but you want to go to a bowl situation where it's warm, you know, or there's a lot of fun things to do. And so I like the idea of this. I like the idea of creating maybe some of these rivalry games that you possibly could have and having rivalry week, kind of that extra game. Where some, you know, like USC could play Notre Dame, or, you know, I know Michigan, Ohio State get to play, but it would be fun, you know, to have kind of that as a special week of college football and do it kind of independent of everything. Yeah, so I like that. I think it's a good one.
What's awesome is what if there was a New Year's Day, you know, kind of unofficial bowl, just kind of an extra game to be played between Utah and BYU. Maybe they get paid a little bit extra from, you know, the city that's hosting them or whatever. Like I said, kind of that unofficial, because you get gifts as players. They get little. They get a certain amount that they're able to be gifted by the, you know, the association or whomever is sponsoring the bowl or whatever. And so do that and still have it be a rivalry game. You know, when you got that extra game back in 2015, the Las Vegas Bowl. That was hilarious. First of all, because you had the feeling like. Like Dr. Chris Hill didn't want the game to happen anyway, like most years, the ability to be able to say, no, I don't want this game and we don't need it. That was kind of his thing, you know, they had in his back pocket all the time. And so when it happened, we even said, you know, pretty maybe halfway through the year, we go, what if they get to the point where they could be invited to the Las Vegas Bowl? Yeah. And so is Utah. And I'd go, you know what? ESPN would be dumb not to at least explore that possibility. And at some point, they just make their invite and say, well, this is the bowl. You got to go with it.
Yeah, and it's a good pick.
This one says, I'm against it because they're already going to be playing in 2021. This could be the possibility of two 2021 games for BYU and Utah if you have the beginning of the season. Another one says, no way, don't care for Utah. Another one says, why would we ever want to play BYU again? All of these responses, of course, are some of my favorites. But, Scott, so the other poll question that we have has to deal with Mike McCarthy and the Cowboys. And we'll talk a little bit about this in our NFL roundup. But the poll question that we have up on the website is, will Mike McCarthy be the Cowboys head coach after this year? What do you think?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to click on yes. 76% of the polls say no. Nah, it's a little bit too early to start pulling the trigger on that.
Because it makes the Cowboys look stupid, too. And you lose Dak Prescott, that's a big thing. What will happen is Mike Nolan will be gone. That happens early on in a coach's tenure, is they go, you're going to have to change some of your defensive coaches in it, and a head coach is glad to do that because rather him than me, and that's just, you know, that's just the way it is.
They've given up the most points by any team in NFL history this far into a season.
Yeah, it's really bad, and I can't believe that the players are all that bad. And I just know so many times simplify, keep it simple, stupid is really the best way to do it, and just let these players. Some players work better if you just, you know, just kind of give them a foundation to work on and just let their natural athletic ability take over. So probably most of the time it's just better to keep it simple.
Scott, I saw something, and this is something I know you brought up when we were talking about it in show prep.
I want to talk about
this, Alex. Saw last night my Seahawks ended up losing the football game that they were winning the entire time except for the very waning moments of regulation. And then, of course, in overtime, Russell Wilson threw his third pick. And then the Cardinals ended up sealing the deal. It kind of makes the NFC West a nice little battle. But that game, among others, irked you on one particular thing, and that is time management by these guys who are supposed to be experts. Come on.
I have watched this, and even the experts are getting it wrong, and I've just been watching this through the early part of the season, and it just boiled over with me this weekend. It's like you've got to understand something in a two-minute situation. And I don't care if you're ahead or behind. Okay, the only thing that matters, there's nothing else matters, and people aren't getting this, that time is your enemy, plain and simple. Okay, it's nothing more than that. So if you are trying to go down and score, you cannot waste time on the clock. There are just certain rules about it that like if you call a play and you get 5 yards on it and you go to the line of scrimmage and you start calling another play, it's almost a waste of time. And Arizona actually did a nice job of this where they were running up the middle of the field, and it's because I don't know what defense Seattle was playing, but it was a really not a very smart one.
They were out of gas, bro.
But what Arizona could run in the middle of the field, which you never do when you don't have timeouts. You can't do it unless you do it like they did. They ran it, and then they killed the clock immediately. And so many of these teams are just frivolous, and they're just wasting all of this time. So time is your enemy. Now, if you're ahead, like Seattle was in this game, they had a situation. Arizona, at the very end of the game, kicked a field goal with 2 seconds left. With 2 seconds left on the clock, had Seattle on the previous possession, they did not let the 40-second clock run down to zero. And again, time is your enemy. Everything, like normal game situations, so what if you get a delay of game penalty, call timeout with 1 second left on the clock, I don't care. They punted the ball with 7 seconds. They gave Arizona an extra 7 seconds on that final drive where they kicked the game-winning field goal.
That could have been the difference.
And that was the difference right there in the game. And that is the difference. That, like, there the seconds are worth millions here. And so many teams are so idiotic about this. So Penn State is playing Indiana, and they get the ball on the 50-yard line. And they have, like, 55 seconds to go. And all they have to do is – they only have to go 20 yards in 55 seconds and to give their kicker an opportunity to kick a reasonable field goal, right? And they just sit and waste time, and the quarterback doesn't know what he's doing, and they're just burning seconds off the clock. And, I mean, in college football, the clock stops for a while. When you get a first down, you can go up, get a first down, and call a play. And they just were so poor at managing this that they gave their kicker a chance to kick it. Right, 57-yard field goal, and he misses it by a yard, a yard, and then this game's over, right? And instead, they give the other team a chance. They give them a chance to actually go down and guess what they did? They actually went down and so you, the point is when you're ahead in a game, you've got to milk that clock and you've got to burn every last second you can, and when you're behind, you have to conserve every last second you possibly can. And so many of these teams are mismanaging those situations. And I could sit here for 2 hours. When I got in the NFL, Alex, Don Shula, they sat down, we went over the two-minute drill and situations all the time. All the time. It took up a massive chunk of our playbook.
Well, you know,
it's that important.
But even the Cardinals, at one point, Cliff Kingsbury had to be reminded he needed to take a timeout
right.
or get a delay of game by his assistant coach. He was totally not even paying attention. And then on top of that, they tried to kick a field goal on second down, and then they ended up missing the field goal, giving the Seahawks the last person we want to give the ball, and they got lucky that he threw a pick, but the last person we want to give a ball with a minute 40 left is Russell Wilson, my heavens. So, mismanagement all across the board. We're going to take the break here. We'll come back. Jeremiah Jensen from KSL 5 Television is going to join us, talk a little bit about what happened over the weekend, some of the locals in the NFL. So much more to go. Stay with us.
All right, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Keery. Oh, boy. You talk about Nick Foles. We were talking about him earlier on our show. And, of course, the Bears are playing the L.A. Rams in Los Angeles.
As soon as you heap praise on the guy.
And, I liked it. I was watching. I was like, okay, look, they're going to a hurry-up offense, changing the tempo. What happens? They go right down the field. And then guess what they do?
Throws a pick.
Well, he gets in the huddle, and they start talking about things. They ruin all the momentum and throws an interception.
See, that's the way it is. That's why I like to do show prep too, Scott. I don't want to talk about the show. Come on, let's go to hurry up mode and just start throwing some screen passes and let's just work on the scripted plays that we have.
I'd like to throw a screen pass to you, Alex. I'd like to see that.
Alex. I like to be out there. My favorite thing as an offensive lineman, I loved running the screen plays. Because you kind of do the, Olay thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you got past me, dog.
Right. You're acting.
And then when the guy comes back, then ding dong. Then they're there and you welcome them with open arms.
Also love that matchup with the defensive back, right?
That's true. Every once in a while you find yourself with a cornerback who's kind of going, oh, and then you're going, no time. You can't break me down, buddy. You're just going to have to run into me.
You're not going
to
win this match.
That's the voice of Jeremiah Jensen from KSL 5 Television joining us on the program here as we watch this Monday Night Football game. 17-3 right now, the Rams and the Bears. So first things first, let's start off with we listened to Kalani Sitake's comments from today's press conference, kind of debriefing everybody on the game that was and the game that will be this weekend. Zach Wilson coming out as early as he has been in some of these games. Do you agree with that? If you're a BYU coach and you go, we got to make sure and preserve this kid's health. But at the same time, this is the most attention your program has gotten in more than a decade. And it's on the back of this kid who you need to have big numbers to be able to get more attention. It's the person that they keep talking about. And then BYU. It's not BYU and then Zach Wilson. It's Zach Wilson and then BYU afterward.
Yeah, just as somebody who's watching the game and is a fan of the game, I want to see Zach Wilson throw more. I want to see him play more. Then you look at the history of BYU quarterbacks over the last 10 years, guys, and what has happened to a lot of these quarterbacks.
Some injuries. A few injuries from here.
A few.
Here and
yeah.
There.
So have they gone a year without having a quarterback get hurt or having to replace a guy? So I get why Kalani would be so eager to get him off the field and on the sideline, meaning they would get him through another game and get him to the next game and get him to the next game and not wear him out because there's a history there. And if you are a head coach and you've had to go through that before, it's top of your mind every year over and over again. So I get why Kalani is making that decision. And I get how, as a fan, you're frustrated because you want to see more Zach.
It's hard because I think he's got a chance to be in a real discussion about the Heisman Trophy. I really do. And I think, but in order to really be in it, he's got to have some crazy numbers to have some serious consideration. On the flip side of it, what you're saying, Jeremiah, I also agree with that because you start messing with karma. You know, you start forcing things and games clearly in hand and it's time to take the starters out and you push your luck. And a lot of times that just goes south on you. I think of a couple of years ago when Britton Covey got hurt and they talked Coach Whittingham into letting him finally run a kickoff back because they fair caught everything. So he finally agrees to do it. And that was the actual play that Britton Covey got hurt on. And so I get that karma thing and keeping people healthy. But I got a question for you, Jeremiah, because I know we're going to talk about locals in the pros, and I know we can go through the whole list and talk about you know, who are they and what are they doing. I want to know your opinion about who you think of all the locals in the pros, who's having the biggest impact this year on their team.
Ooh.
The biggest impact on their team. I mean,
or just in general.
The best local player in the NFL is Bobby Wagner. He's the best middle linebacker in football. So
Better than Fred Warner?
Oh, now we can debate. What? See, that's the thing. And props to Fred, because he's putting himself in that conversation. Now, when Fred Fred's a five-time All-Pro, then I'll start having that conversation. I don't think Fred's there yet, but no. Fred's on his way. Fred's on the right track. Fred is a star in the NFL, and he's going to have those type of accolades coming up if he continues to work hard. He's not where Bobby Wagner is yet. Bobby Wagner is a future Hall of Famer. He's already there.
Yeah.
Is he the one having the biggest impact then?
I'm thinking through this now, Scott. He's not the one that's having the biggest impact right now. The question is, who is that?
Mm.
So
Jamal Williams had a big weekend, of course.
Jamal was
big Aaron Jones, yes.
For the Packers, and the Packers are 5-1 now.
Yes.
Julian Blackman's had a couple of interceptions,
and that was the name, Scott, you just hit. I was going to throw out Julian Blackman because the Colts defense leads the NFL in interceptions.
Mm.
Julian has two of them.
That's awesome.
And he tipped a pass that led to another. Julian Blackman is having a huge impact as a rookie on that Colts defense that is now one of the best defenses in the NFL. And you remember how mediocre they were last year. The Colts are a legitimate playoff team now. So, Scott, my answer to your question is Julian Blackman, which is crazy.
Wow.
Because, you were there like 11 months ago.
The injury.
He tore his ACL.
Yes.
And at that time, as soon as it happened, I'm like, oh, no, like, Julian's, he's got to play in the NFL and he's got to go to the, I mean, I was going through my mind because I know the kid and I'll be honest, I pull for him. And I felt like at that point, everything was taken from him at that point.
He's got to carry on that Leighton Lancer tradition of being a great NFL DB.
So where's Taysom Hill?
Oh, boy.
That's another discussion
we haven't even talked about
it. So last year, maybe my response to you would have been Taysom with what he was doing for that Saints offense. The NFL has figured out what Taysom is and what he's doing. And if they're going to continue to use him in that form, they got to find a different way to do it because everybody's scouted it. You know, Scott, as soon as everybody gets the tape, it doesn't take long, right?
That's true.
People sniff out gimmicks, and some of that stuff's gimmicky.
Smart,
he's not supposed to be gimmick,
smart.
Though. That's the thing is, that at some point, he's supposed to be the guy.
When
center.
You bring in the quarterback on third and five at the 10-yard line, you know what's happening, right? So that's a gimmick. And so Sean Payton's got to go back to the drawing board and figure out, okay, how do we use Taysom in a way that uses him best? I mean, and perhaps maybe it's just you wait on Taysom to become the starting quarterback next year when Drew Brees retires because, Scott, Drew Brees is washed.
He's kind of there, isn't he?
I think so. He's not the same quarterback.
Well, and so he's done, quote, you know, kind of you could see that age hitting him hard this year. We talked about whether or not this would be the last year, and I think that's kind of answering itself. And then it was like, well, then that means it's the obvious time for Taysom to take over. When his stock among his own fan, you know, the New Orleans Saints fans are also not excited when Taysom goes in because it usually means Alvin Kamara's coming out or Drew Brees is coming out. And they go, and yesterday there was a moment where they were driving. It was second and seven, and they put Taysom in, and he threw an incomplete screen pass. And they went, and then the commentators were sitting there, and they go, so why do you do that? Why did you just take out Drew Brees?
I get it.
After they were having like some, you know, a streak of some good luck, and he was throwing the ball well, and they were winning. And you go, well, I don't know why. The answer is Sean Payton has an obsession, I think, with Taysom Hill that really paid off in the last couple of years. And now people are moving right past that. Now they've caught up to speed as to where that's going. And so I want Taysom to be a really good quarterback. I just don't know if now I start to look at it and go, I don't know if they've even given him time to be a quarterback yet at all. The guy's still never thrown a touchdown pass in the NFL. His stats are 0 touchdowns, 1 interception. And they've sat there for about a year and a half in that same spot, or 2 years in that same spot. And his effectiveness has been in that gimmicky, calling weird plays type of a situation. Okay, next up on the list here, you have the opportunity to watch this game next week, or you've got the Western Kentucky game this week with BYU. Mitch told us earlier in the show, this is not a good Western Kentucky team.
No.
You don't want them to be to overlook Western Kentucky, but that Boise State game on Saturday where they whipped up on Utah State was a harbinger. It could be a very beneficial thing for BYU to have Boise State be good and for them to go up and beat Boise State for the first time ever up in Boise.
Yeah, if you're a BYU fan, you're cheering for Boise this weekend too. You want a top 20 Boise State when those two teams meet, because this is the best chance BYU is going to get on their schedule as of right now. I mean, the schedule could still change, but as of right now, Boise State's the best football team on their schedule. They need to have that opportunity to beat a top 20 team on the road. And that would really be a signature win for them this year. As much of a signature win as you can get under the circumstances. They want Boise State to be good and in the top 20. So that's something you can look forward to. The Western Kentucky, that's for player development.
Yeah, that's when you still sit Gunnar Romney. That's
now,
when
this
you still...
is the week where you sit Zach Wilson at halftime.
Oh, come on.
I'm okay with it this week. Because you got to get ready for Boise.
Tonight, real quickly here, Jeremiah, what do we have on KSL 5 television?
We've got... There's two locals in this game, Jalen Johnson and Terrell Burgess.
Nice.
Who, don't forget Terrell, they're making plays in this game, and we also have soccer championships tonight, girls soccer.
All right, take a look. KSL 5 Television, 10 o'clock. JJ, thanks for hanging out.
You got it.
Taking the break here. We'll come back with more to go right here on KSL's Unrivaled After News, Traffic, and Weather.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, thanks for being with us on the program this evening. Thanks for being part of the show every day. You can download the podcast wherever podcasts are found. And so you can hear Scott's dulcet tones. And you know, if it moves you, you can... download the podcast and have it on a more permanent basis. Scott, moving toward the end of the show on a Monday, it's always the best time to do this particular segment because we have so much to jump into. It's the unrivaled, not the MVP, the unrivaled NFL Roundup. Here we go.
NFL Roundup. Premium grade A pro football stories from your two hosts, a former NFL quarterback and the other guy. It's the unrivaled NFL Roundup.
All right, Scott, right off the bat here, anything jump off the page for you NFL-wise from this last weekend of games and anything that you saw that you were like, I've got to add my two cents on this thing?
I think one of the things that, of course, we talked about the time management thing, that just really bugged me this weekend. But aside from that, in the NFL, you've got a lot of really good teams, and then you just have a lot of really bad teams. And you look at some of these divisions, like the NFC West is really competitive. I mean, all four teams are really good, and that's a really exciting thing when within a division there's so much competition, and you see this where there's an extra playoff game. It's very possible you could get like all four teams in a division actually in
right,
the playoffs.
And for the sake of like actual fairness and for the sake of good competition and the best football you could imagine. That's what you want anyway. Like, if the NFC West can get all four of those teams in, they have the most wins so far of any of the divisions. They have the most points scored of any of the divisions. They have the fewest points given up. This is, like, the best division of football, bar none. And then you have, as you call it, Scott, the NFC least. The NFC East is so bad, and somebody's going to win that thing. And the rules dictate that if you win a division, you're going to the playoffs. That's something you can't change at all. And some garbage team is going to go to the playoffs from the NFC East because that's the rules that we've set up.
And what you get with this, aside from the bad team getting in there, when you get a lot of these good teams that are from, you know, that have familiarity with one another, it's just more of that excitement for the fans.
Right.
You know, you get the team you like. For example, you're a Seahawks fan, and then you get to, you know they may battle the 49ers, which is a team you're not happy about, or the Rams. And they may face each other in the playoffs, and that just creates more excitement for the fans of these things, of these teams, but also of NFL fans, because when you get rivalries playing one another in the playoffs, there's an added dimension to that that just adds to it, and you tend to get a much better football game than maybe you would have otherwise.
I saw this story and I thought, my goodness, of all the things. First of all, the Dallas Cowboys, you know, I mean, they're 2-5. The Washington football team's now 2-5. The I think the Eagles now have two wins. They're still just a one-win team in New York. So you have these really bad teams in this division. But Andy Dalton going down with that awful hit and being kicked out, I hated seeing that, even though the Cowboys having this lack of success as being, you know, this juggernaut of a team with all this talent. There's this little part of me that goes, oh, that's kind of nice to see that they still can't figure it out yet. But I hated that play for Andy Dalton. I hated that whole thing. But Mike McCarthy, here's the thing. This is a bad situation in Dallas. It's the worst place to be a head coach if you are not winning, because then all they want to do after the game, Scott, is ask the Joneses about you. So Stephen Jones was asked after the game. Of course, he's the eldest son of Jerry Jones and the CEO of the Cowboys. And he said they're asking for a vote of confidence from Stephen Jones. Yeah. If they're asking for it, it's not a good thing. We've got the right head coach. And you go, you're seven games into your first season and people are asking for a vote of confidence. It could not be going worse for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, right? And the answer can mean a lot of different things. It doesn't necessarily mean they have confidence in him or not. They may and just say, look, it's tough when you lose what we've lost. I mean, we expected to have a pretty good team offensively. Dak Prescott has started to establish himself as one of these more elite quarterbacks. And him going down is not, you know, it's not a coaching thing. It's just a, you know, it's a force du jour, force majeure. It's an act of nature, right?
Could
it's
you,
an act of God.
Could you force bring majeure. Me the, could you bring me the force majeure of the day, waiter?
Pardon me. Do you have any Grey Poupon? So it's just one of those things that are out of your control. Now, what's in Mike McCarthy's control is Mike Nolan, and there have been issues on the defense. And guess what? Mike McCarthy goes, okay, I'm in trouble here. I'm either going to go or you're going to go, and you're going to go. And that's the thing you have as the head coach. And most head coaches are going to let coaches be sacrificed to save themselves. So you might see an adjustment in some of the coaches that the Dallas Cowboys have next year, or possibly even at this time this year. The NFL's tough. It's just, you got to win. And when you're with the Dallas Cowboys, it's even harder because you're under such a larger magnifying glass than most teams. I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars, nobody cares. Cincinnati Bengals, nobody cares. I mean, even the Tennessee Titans, who are playing really well this year, no one really cares, if you're winning or losing. But the Dallas Cowboys, for whatever reason, people care about it.
Everybody wants to know.
So something's going to change there. And who knows? It could be Mike McCarthy at the end of the year. I'm just surprised they haven't played better under him.
You know what's really sad about it?
It just feels like everything's just gone away so quickly in the year. I mean, it's only seven games into the season.
And it's sad because I think everybody assumed Mike McCarthy would do pretty well because he has a good track record. He's a Super Bowl winning coach. But it's been strange to watch the Dallas, you know, kind of soap opera unfold. And every year we watch this and we kind of see what's going on. And it's never a good year when Dallas is just 8-8. It's they either have to be the best team or the worst team in the NFL because both storylines just get so much attention. And one of the things that I was looking at, and I was just like, when you watch teams and see this ebb and flow, the face of consistency in this league for the last 20 years has been the Patriots. They had their biggest loss since in 22 years, Scott, at Foxborough Stadium or at Gillette Stadium. They had their worst loss in 22 seasons. So now you can finally put to bed all those discussions about whether or not it was Tom Brady or if it was, anything else except for the fact that you had the best quarterback in the history of the NFL, and now Cam Newton, who's struggling and says, I deserve all the criticism because I'm not playing well. How do you correct that problem in New England from going from the best to the worst? Yeah.
What's hard in New England? One is not sure how good they are defensively. But two, when you've had Tom Brady, so it's like you have this constant. We know who Tom Brady is. We know what he's all about. We know if we plug pieces into our offensive system that fit who Tom Brady is, we will have success. It doesn't matter who the player is, the name, it's just a type. So you have some kind of tight end type, right? And of course it was Aaron Hernandez, and you remember back in the day when they always have a good tight end, right? So then it's Gronkowski, and then there's some kind of possession receiver, and who's a guy that just can get you 5 or 6 yards at a minimum. Julian Edelman, Wes Welker kind of guy. And then you have a third guy or a running back. And the problem is Cam Newton is not built and wired the same way as Tom Brady. So they got to figure out what makes Cam Newton tick and adjust and get the right pieces around him to have that same success. That's really what the problem is.
Let's take the break here. We'll come back. We got more to go here on KSL's Unrivaled. Our two-minute drill to wrap things up. When we continue, we will have... we'll have that two-minute drill. Anything we didn't get to in the NFL roundup, everything. We're going to throw it all in the pot and make Scott throw it down the field and get a win for us. So stay with us. More to go. It's KSL and Rival on KSL News Radio.
Hey, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Keir. Yes, it's that familiar music. It's the last segment of our show. It's the time for the two-minute drill. You know what happens in the two-minute drill? Well, it's late in the game, so you got to hurry down the field and score a touchdown and kick a field goal to win the game. Don't have a lot of time, so you got to hurry. Same thing in our show. We don't have a lot of time left in our show, but we got a lot to talk about. So we talk a little bit about a lot of things. We hurry up. We win. We go down the field. We win the day. We're happy. Everyone gets a trophy, and we go home smiling.
Scott, I know everybody is like all pumped about that that play that DK Metcalf made. Running down the pick six. It was a tremendous play. We do this thing now where we go, oh, you know, he got up to 22.84 miles an hour on that run. I'm always like, I don't really care about
the miles
per hour.
That never means anything. It never means anything to me.
But the fact that he ran down a DB who was obviously smaller than he was, he looks very much like Calvin Johnson did for the Detroit Lions. Just this massive dude who all is like 6'5". 235, 240 pounds, still runs a 4.3 at that size, you know, and can just and is just a better athlete than everybody else. But it was no consolation to me as a Seahawk fan to watch the meltdown and to watch three picks by Russell Wilson. Is that kind of a game?
Well, what's hard?
Does he still have a chance at the MVP, Scott? That's all I want to know.
Yeah, of course he does. But what's hard about that is I really want to talk about the effort. You know, you see such great effort by so many players. And that DK Metcalf, and it's like it kind of goes to naught, you know. It's kind of a waste, and so you hate to see great effort not rewarded in those situations. And clearly, Seattle had plenty of opportunities to win the game, and I think you know, you get to a point where you're 5-0, and that kind of wears on you a little bit. You need kind of a crummy game. You need to be brought back to earth a little bit. It's hard to win every single game in the NFL. It's only happened one time in the modern history of the NFL. And so it's just not an easy thing to do, and you just can't expect you're going to win every game.
The big one that I saw from this weekend, speaking of Cowboys, it was today, actually. It wasn't a big one. It was just another thing that added to the Cowboys' sadness. There was a conference call with their defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan. It was put on hold because he had Tabasco sauce on his finger and got it into his eye. And the idea
Have
was...
Have you ever done that? That's a real thing. Okay?
I've done all the iterations of this.
Yes.
Of those things, right?
Wasabi sauce when yes. you're... Yeah.
The whole, cutting up yeah. jalapenos, you touch oh, your yeah. eye, yeah, you know, whatever.
It's awful.
So if Clarence Hill Jr., who's covering the Cowboys, brings that up and says... For shame, I can't believe they would do that. Now, there's the part where you're having the breakfast burrito during your conference call that might be a little bit of a, you know, maybe don't.
Yeah, but these coaches, Alex, they don't have a lot of time. They it's a grind for all these coaches. So to squeeze in a little bit of time to have something to eat,
to squeeze
you know,
in a little bit of Tabasco sauce into your eye is
whatever,
tough thing to
yeah,
do.
Yeah, whatever. People need to just calm down and relax just a little bit. Mike Nolan's not a guy who's trying to dodge, you know, a conversation or whatever. But I will tell you, I'm going to remember this if I ever have to duck something and
just say, hey,
I got Tabasco in my eye. Sorry, can't come and talk to you.
Yeah.
You know what? I might use it on our show tomorrow night. Sorry, I can't be on the show, Alex. I got Tabasco
the thing,
we're
supposed
in my
to have,
eye.
We're scheduled to have another baby next week. You think I'm not? That's how I. Hey, look.
Another
honey,
one.
I'd love to be
oh my
there.
My goodness.
Honey, I'd love to be there. I got a little Tabasco in my eye, though. Yeah.
Could you take care of things on your own here? Not going to be available.
Go over well. Look, Alex is a good guy. He's a father of other children, and so.
And your wife's going to say, you think Tabasco sauce in your eye hurts. Wait till I get done with you. He'll never walk upright again.
Honey, I know you're going through birth or whatever, but I've got a real situation down here in the cafeteria. I'll catch you at home. Boise State is looking to bring fans to Albertsons Stadium because, you know, it'd be weird to not have people in the stands for that BYU-Boise State game. I think it would be – I'm hoping they don't put fans at Albertsons Stadium because that would be an advantage, according to Scott, and what we've seen so far. An away team that normally goes into a hostile situation, which absolutely Albertsons Stadium is. BYU's never won there, Scott. I hope they have no fans there. That'd be a benefit for BYU, right?
Well, if they did have fans, kind of like the Houston situation, if there was a chance for BYU fans to go there, because it's not a super, you know, long distance for BYU fans
to
travel.
Yes, they can make the trip, yes.
And I'm sure there's a decent number of BYU fans in Idaho, although Boise State has got a lot of fan base in Idaho. With 25% of the stadium, I don't know how much that's really going to impact things. And if BYU actually has fans, I don't know that it would actually hurt. All I know is having some fans in the stands has got to just make these players feel just a little bit better. You just have to. I don't care if they're for or against you. You play the game so you can celebrate with the fans and put on a show for the fans. When they're not there, that's a tough thing to do.
It was a fun situation at Lavelle Edwards Stadium this weekend to see the 6,000 fans there. They were pumped. They were absolutely excited about it. And it actually did not feel like only 6,000 fans. I'm not saying they snuck in more. What I'm saying is they were loud. They were on top of it, and I thought that they were as excited to be there as. And I was really glad to see the BYU players go around the stadium and clap with all the fans and wave and take that time because they really love having them there, man. And you know what, Scott? There were probably a dozen, maybe even two dozen Texas State parents or fans at this game. And I thought, what a trip from San Marcos to take to Provo to watch your boys.
Yeah, but
lose
if it's
by 45.
if it's your son, and it's like their last year or they're
right,
playing, you go to everything. My parents went to every game I was in college, and they made some long road trips to Lincoln, Nebraska, and some other places, and they loved every minute of it. You know, regardless of the environment or if we're going to win or lose.
Yeah. Now I get it. And you know, there was that last touchdown that BYU's backups gave up on the to Texas State kind of toward the end. And their fan group was, like, hilarious. They just kept hooting and hollering. They knew they're down by 40 points, and they just kept it going, and the fans were clapping around them and kind of going. And the other thing, I will say the hospitality folks at BYU do a great job of welcoming visiting fans. They usually give them a bunch of gifts and stuff. I bet because there's so few of them, I still hope they were able to kind of say, hey, thanks for coming. They usually give them some ice cream for the road from the BYU Creamery, Scott. It's kind of a nice deal.
Yeah.
Finally, speaking of stadiums and having some small capacity, UNLV, Allegiant Stadium, the Black Pearl, where the Raiders will not have fans this season. UNLV will have fans, up to 2,000 for the first two games. 2,000 fans, Scott. I know it doesn't sound like a lot like we said, but it's still cool to be able to use that brand new venue somehow, at least.
Yeah, and I think that I don't know. It kind of feels
is for UNLV, though.
Right? It kind of feels bad to me. It's like I want to say to these fans, you know, could you please not make a mess? We're not going to sell concessions. We don't want any popcorn to get on the floor. We don't want you to spill your soda pop or whatever thing you bring because this is in pristine shape, and we want to kind of keep it that way. Until we can get the raucous Raiders fans in here to destroy it. Until then, you know, please take your shoes off when you enter the building, and you can put them back on when you leave.
All right.
It just feels weird to me.
It does feel a little bit strange.
I want to be one of the 2,000 fans. I just want to go in the stadium. I don't know why. I don't even care to go in stadiums, but I, for whatever reason, I want to go in the Raiders stadium in Las Vegas. I just do.
All right. We're taking the break here. For Scott Mitchell, I'm Alex Keery. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back again tomorrow night on another version of KSL's Unrivaled. So for Scott, I'm Alex. Thanks to Jeremy, our producer, every night, doing all the work behind the scenes. And so for everybody else, I'm Alex. We'll see you tomorrow night, everybody.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Shariza's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.